So we have learned all about the Russian hacking scandals when it comes to the Democratic National Committee and certain individuals that worked for Hillary Clinton or worked with Hillary Clinton and others. But the Russians and foreign governments have also been hacking into private companies. We, of course, had the big Sony hacking scandal where we think it was probably the North Koreans, but we're not entirely sure. And Amy Pascal had all of her private emails put all over the internet. And Yahoo also was the subject of an attack. This time it was the Russians. The hack, which the Department of Justice said was initiated in January of 2014, affected at least 500 million Yahoo accounts. So if one of your email accounts is a Yahoo account, then your system may have been compromised, too. Joining us to talk about this is Milan Patel, who's a former special agent in the FBI Cyber Division. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So how bad is this problem right now?
So generally speaking, I mean, state-sponsored activity against U.S. assets is a very big problem. The former director of the FBI, the current director of the FBI, have put that that assessment as, you know, even more damaging potentially than just terrorism alone. And so, yeah, this is a major problem, both state-sponsored activity and criminal activity emanating from Eastern Europe and Russia.
And what's the end game here? Do they want bank account information? Do they want information to blackmail you? What are they looking for?
So all of the above. So we know for a long time state-sponsored activities revolved around espionage and building sort of a dossier on somebody to either blackmail or in furtherance of other intelligence operations. This particular hack is very interesting in that it was FSB officers and criminal elements going after a data set that was valuable in two ways. One, to collect information on, you know, Russian journalists, U.S. journalists, government employees, military officers, as well as using those emails and those profiles to commit, you know, crimes for monetary gain. So logging into these email accounts and finding gift cards and finding bank account numbers, tax returns, and then also using those emails as just a spamming campaign.
Now, I got to ask you a question. So, obviously, Yahoo has now been hacked. What would you say, for a normal person out there like myself, what is the safest, account to use? Is it Google? Is it like a Gmail? Is it AOL back in the day? Because no one's actually on that, so you'd probably be safe because they don't think they're going to find anyone on AOL
radar
anymore.
So, it's in the question of what email service you would use over another. They're all generally very safe. Yahoo was targeted for a long time with you know, considerable resources from a nation state. And so if that same pressure was applied to another web-based email account service, likely, you know, a similar scenario would have unfolded. I think it's more important that users understand safety when it comes to web-based email accounts, which is you should not be storing, you know, uber-sensitive material on those web-based accounts. And two, your authentication to get into the account should not be just a password. It should be either a text message to your phone that gives you a randomly generated number or an app on your phone that provides you a number that you would enter into, let's say, Yahoo or Google after you've entered in your password. That way, if a bad guy's stolen your username and password, they would get to the login prompt, but they wouldn't get any further because they didn't have your cell phone. They didn't have the app on your phone to get a code and then, you know, finish logging into that web-based email account. So it's more important about getting people educated around two-step or what we call multi-factor authentication than it is, you know, choosing the right service. Having said that, there are email services that offer encryption and things like that, which are obviously valuable. But obviously any email services that don't have those security, you know, implemented, whether it be two-factor authentication or encryption, you should steer clear of those.
But if they hack into the server, does it matter if you have all of these layers of security surrounding your specific account?
So it does, right? So what we're talking about in the Yahoo hack was profiles being stolen, not the contents of those emails, email accounts being stolen. So those are two sort of different things. One is very much personal, right? It's a one-to-one. It's user and account and data. They weren't necessarily siphoning the servers for all the contents of all the emails. They were going after the profiles and getting the passwords, which then could be used into log into individual accounts. So, you know, this was it's a bit confusing, but it was not really about getting the content of the email. That's sort of a byproduct of getting the account and password after the fact.
And how do you know if your account has been compromised? Is there any, like, telltale signs that you can you go, oh, I need to go ahead and start changing my passwords now, even if you're not a Yahoo member?
So there's a lot of things you can do. There's most of the web-based email account services have notifications where you can turn them on if an IP address is found logging into your computer that is not the norm. So a Russian IP address or an Eastern European IP address logging into your account or attempting to log into your account or attempting to change your password. You can get text messages. You can get emails sent to a backup email account letting you know that somebody's messing around with your primary email account.
What should the government response be? Because I remember Jillian and I, we were kind of perplexed by this when the North Koreans hacked into Sony and everyone seemed to just love the fact that the contents of those emails were out and everyone participated in the pile-on of Amy Pascal. We were saying, well, wait a minute. If a foreign government can go and do this to Sony, they can do it to you or they can do it to any other corporation out there. And people just kind of treated that like it was a joke. And it was Amy Pascal getting her comeuppance. What should the proper response be from the government?
So I think there are, you know, sort of two modes of a response. One is an overt action, like this one today, where they formally indicted four individuals and basically spilled parts of the investigation in the press release to talk about how they did it, why they did it. But I would submit there's a whole host of other covert actions that take place within the government against adversaries that slow them down, let them know that we're onto them. But those are things that should not be reported on and really shouldn't make it into the public because it affects the tempo and the capabilities of our government assets, putting sort of a ring around, some of these foreign adversaries to slow them down.
Is this kind of the poor man's way of warfare now, where you don't have to be a government that can afford missiles that cost millions and millions of dollars or have defense departments that have billion-dollar budgets? You can just have a 300-pound guy in his mom's basement doing this stuff for you?
That's absolutely correct. It's hard to process sometimes, but, one person can bring down an enterprise. This wasn't the case, 25, 30 years ago. What we see a lot of is we see tools and sophisticated techniques being packaged up as products in the criminal underground on the internet and being sold and being used by less sophisticated hackers to do their job. And so 10 years ago, if you were a virus writer and you created malware, you were very technical, you maybe sold this tool or used this tool, but now these software packages are packaged up and they operate like mainstream software where you click here, point here, you want to attack 10,000 people, you put in the addresses and you hit send and it does the attack for you. So we're seeing a lot more of that, and I don't think that's going to slow down as malware and sophisticated techniques become more productized by criminals.
It's crazy to think how much damage these people can do from, like you said, the comfort of their living room in some foreign country. They just sit there, hack away, and they can get rich off of it. They can screw up people's lives. I mean, they could really do a lot of damage.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, I saw this when I was a field agent in the FBI, going after Russian cybercrime. We would often pick up students who left Russia, came to the U.S. to go to school, but then they would be propositioned by cybercrime operators, organized crime, to commit, criminal activity within the United States. And we would often find, young Russian kids with, $20,000, $50,000, $1 million, $2 million in cash in their house or in a small apartment in New York City. And all this is being funneled back to a criminal enterprise. What we've seen over the last 10 years is really traditional organized crime and its structure migrate over to cybercrime. And we know this because based on interviews of people we've arrested, we've heard a common theme, which is, why would I commit a violent crime when I know I can go to jail for forever? Why not commit credit card fraud where if I get caught, maybe I do 2 years? And so there's a lot of things that they've taken advantage of our system. And I think as we progress and mature, I think, you know, U.S. criminal code will start coming around. We'll start seeing stiffer sentences against cybercrime operators. But the challenge really is getting the rest of the world, particularly in Eastern Europe and Western Europe, on board with some of the same sort of ideas we have about prosecuting cybercrime. And often that's been a sticking point, which is we may be able to extradite somebody from, you know, Moldova, but we may not be able to from Russia or another country that doesn't have, you know, that relationship with us. And oftentimes the bad guys prey on that. You know, they know that they can attack U.S. citizens from a basement in Bulgaria because they don't have anything to worry about.
Why is it that Russia is the epicenter for all this stuff? Is it because it's a cartel state?
So it's a combination of that, as well as the Russians have spent a lot of time informally, you know, young people in Russia informally have been trained and really have become very technically sophisticated in the last 15 years. These are young individuals who are very smart, who don't have a lot of money, and need to find a way to make money. And so, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And so you have that combined with those Russian actors not attacking Russian infrastructure, but attacking Western European and U.S. infrastructure. And so if you're law enforcement in Russia, why would you go after a guy who's attacking, you know, U.S. companies? Obviously, if they're attacking, you know, Russian banks, that's a different story. But, you know, the best and richest targets for cybercrime is still United States citizens and United States assets.
And I got to think, if you're seeing your friend, who's also a fellow hacker, who's got $2 million in his apartment, you're going to figure out how to do it. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, why did I get into radio and TV? I should have just been a hacker. I would have made a lot more money a lot quicker.
God. That's exactly right. We've seen what we call malware campaigns, which is, you know, the creation of a malware that then is used and distributed amongst various criminal enterprise. Those uses of that malware and siphoning money from bank accounts has generated Eastern European and Russian criminal gangs hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, in the last 10 years. And so while that is still there and it's still easy to do, you won't see this curbing in any way.
Milan Patel, former FBI Supervisor Special Agent for Cyber Crime Division. Thanks
Say
so much for
again.
Joining us.
Quick.
Yeah, that's a lot
Quicker.
Of words there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.